Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
What Trump is trying to do here is completely illegal. Congress passed a law that appropriated money. It set the policy for the government. Congress passed the law. The president signed it. A new president can't come along and say, I don't agree with the law, and so I'm unilaterally going to disregard it.
Will low-income families be able to keep the heat on? Will seniors have access to another meal on wheels? Or kids in need get breakfast or lunch? Will Medicaid continue? Will children still be able to go to Head Start? We'll speak with a former general counsel to the Office of Management and Budget about Trump's attempts to cut trillions from the federal budget. Then Mexican President Claudia Sheinbaum is set to join other Latin American and Caribbean heads of state for an emergency meeting to respond to Trump's mass deportations. We'll look at Sheinbaum's first 100 days and a response to Trump's renaming the Gulf of Mexico the Gulf of America.
The United Nations recognizes the name Gulf of Mexico, but next, why don't we call it Mexican America? It sounds nice, doesn't it?
We'll also look at how the Chinese startup DeepSeek has upended Silicon Valley. And hear from Ambassador Carolyn Kennedy, cousin of Robert F. Kennedy Jr. She just sent a letter and video to senators calling on them to reject his confirmation to head the Department of Health and Human Services. His confirmation hearing begins today. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. A federal judge in Washington, D.C. has temporarily halted President Trump's radical plan to freeze trillions of dollars in federal grants and loans, even though the money's already been appropriated by Congress. U.S. District Judge Lauren L. Alikhan said Tuesday she would decide by next week whether to make the injunction permanent. The ruling came after several nonprofits and attorneys general from 22 states filed lawsuits arguing the order would have a devastating impact on hundreds of thousands of recipients who rely on federal grants and loans for their operations. At the White House, President Trump's newly minted press secretary, Karoline Leavitt, defended Trump's unprecedented actions.
It means no more funding for illegal DEI programs. It means no more funding for the Green New Scam that has cost American taxpayers tens of billions of dollars. It means no more funding for transgenderism and wokeness across our federal bureaucracy and agencies.
As Trump's federal spending freeze briefly took effect Tuesday, Medicaid reimbursement portals went down in all 50 states, cutting off compensation to hospitals and clinics that provide health care to children, low-income families, and people with disabilities. Senate Democratic leader Chuck Schumer said Trump's actions would likely impact universities, nonprofits, food assistance programs, hospitals, and rural health centers, organizations that assist disabled veterans, and much more.
This decision is lawless. It's destructive, it's dangerous, it's cruel, it's illegal, and it's unconstitutional. Donald Trump has done a lot of bad things in the last week, but nothing's worse than this.
Washington Democratic Senator Patty Murray called Trump's executive order a brazen and illegal move. Maine Independent Senator Angus King said, quote, if this stands, Congress may as well adjourn, unquote. Vermont Independent Senator Bernie Sanders declared of Trump, he is not a king. We'll have more on this story after headlines. The White House has announced plans to offer all 2.3 million federal workers 8 months of salary and benefits in exchange for their resignation in a move condemned by labor unions as an unprecedented violation of laws governing buyout payments. A memo sent by the Office of Personnel Management to federal employees Tuesday urges anyone wishing to accept the deal to type the word resign into the body of an email replying to the offer. The American Federation of Government Employees, which represents more than 800,000 federal government government in Washington, D.C. workers said Trump's goal was to create chaos. Its national president, Everett Kelly, said, quote, between the flurry of anti-worker executive orders and policies, it's clear that the Trump administration's goal is to turn the federal government into a toxic environment where workers cannot stay even if they want to, unquote. President Trump Monday fired two leaders of the National Labor Relations Board in a major attack on workers' rights and labor unions. Trump's surprise removal of Democratic NLRB member Gwen Wilcox came even though federal law says board members can only be fired for neglect or malfeasance. Trump also ousted the NLRB general counsel Jennifer Abruzzo, who wrote in a parting statement, quote, if the agency does not fully effectuate its congressional mandate in the future, I expect workers with assistance from their advocates will take matters into their own hands in order to get well-deserved dignity and respect in the workplace, as well as a fair share of the significant value they add to their employers' operations, she said. White House Press Secretary Karoline Leavitt made her debut in the briefing room Tuesday, admitting to reporters the Trump administration believes all undocumented immigrants are criminals and will be targeted for mass detention and deportation. Raids are taking place nationwide, with thousands arrested since Trump's inauguration in cities like Chicago and New York City, where Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem joined ICE, that's Immigration and Customs Enforcement agents, in operations that began Tuesday, live tweeting the raids. ICE is reportedly planning a round of raids in Aurora, Colorado, Thursday, and three more cities are expected to be targeted next week. President Trump is signing the Laken Riley Act into law today, his first piece of legislation since returning to office. The bill expands mandatory detention and possible deportation of undocumented people who are accused, though not convicted, of nonviolent theft crimes such as shoplifting. This comes as ICE has been directed to meet a quota of between 1,200 and 1,500 arrests per day, as Trump plans to pack ICE detention centers, including those run by for-profit prison companies. In related news, Oklahoma's State Board of Education has unanimously approved a rule that'll force parents to provide proof of their children's citizenship and immigration status when they're enrolled in school. The policy still needs to be approved by Oklahoma's legislature and governor. Meanwhile, deportation flights from the U.S. to Colombia resumed Tuesday after a diplomatic spat over the abuse of asylum seekers who describe being shackled. This is Carlos Gomez, a deportee who arrived in Bogota on Tuesday.
The food they served was bad. Sometimes they gave awful burritos, terrible food, and we were locked up and sleeping for 10 or 12 hours because we had nothing else to do. We didn't even know if it was day or night. We were treated worse than prisoners.
The Senate has confirmed Sean Duffy as Secretary of Transportation on a vote of 77 to 22. Duffy's a former reality TV star, climate denier, and four-term Republican congressmember from Wisconsin who's worked as a lobbyist since resigning from Congress in 2019. As his first official act, Duffy moved to roll back the Biden administration's fuel efficiency standards for new cars and trucks. On Monday, senators voted 68 to 29 to confirm the billionaire hedge fund manager Scott Bessent as U.S. Treasury Secretary, with 16 Democrats supporting the nomination. In a statement, Public Citizen called Bessent an oligarch who spent a career serving rich clients, adding, quote, by ignoring climate change as a financial risk, Trump's Treasury Department under Bessent is on a path that could devastate hardworking families, they said. Senate confirmation hearings open today for President Trump's pick to lead the Department of Health and Human Services, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., an environmental attorney known for spreading public health conspiracy theories and disinformation. He's claimed HIV may not cause AIDS, that COVID-19 was designed to spare Ashkenazi Jews and Chinese people, and that chemicals in the U.S. water supply are leading more children to be gay and transgender. Ahead of RFK Jr.'s appearance before the Senate Committee on Finance, his cousin, Carolyn Kennedy, the former U.S. ambassador to Japan and Australia, daughter of President John F. Kennedy, called on senators to reject RFK Jr.'s nomination.
I've known Bobby my whole life. We grew up together. It's no surprise that he keeps birds of prey as pets, because Bobby himself is a predator. Bobby is addicted to attention and power. Bobby preys on the desperation of parents of sick children, vaccinating his own kids while building a following, hypocritically discouraging other parents from vaccinating theirs.
We'll play more of Carolyn Kennedy's video to senators urging them not to confirm Robert Kennedy later in the broadcast. Kennedy's confirmation hearing follows President Trump's stop work order for all global health funding through the U.S. Agency for International Development, or USAID. On Monday, the Trump administration explicitly ordered foreign health organizations to stop administering drugs for HIV, malaria, and tuberculosis purchased with USAID, even if healthcare workers already have the medications on hand. On Tuesday, Secretary of State Marco Rubio issued a waiver for life-saving drugs under PEPFAR, the president's emergency plan for AIDS relief started by former President George W. Bush, which is credited with saving more than 25 million lives worldwide. But it's not clear whether Rubio's waiver will reverse Trump's freeze on funding for drugs for HIV/AIDS prevention, outreach and testing, and other programs. More than half a million people have returned to an unrecognizable northern Gaza in the past 72 hours, according to Palestinian authorities. People hoping to return home describe the utter decimation of North Gaza after 15 months of relentless Israeli bombings and attacks. In the occupied West Bank, Israeli forces killed at least two Palestinians in fresh raids that began overnight. One of the victims was identified as 25-year-old Osama Omar Abu Haija from Jenin. This comes as Israeli lawmakers have advanced a bill that would further facilitate the theft and purchase of land for illegal Israeli settlements in the West Bank. Israel's also continued its attacks on southern Lebanon, where at least five people were injured earlier today and another 24 wounded on Tuesday in Israeli airstrikes. Senate Democrats have blocked a bill that would sanction the International Criminal Court over its arrest warrants against Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and former Defense Minister Yoav Gallant for possible war crimes in Gaza. UN experts and others have warned the legislation would set a dangerous precedent for the erosion of international law. This comes as Trump and Netanyahu are set to meet at the White House next week. And in the Democratic Republic of Congo, protests broke out in Kinshasa Tuesday as people denounced inaction from the international community to end the raging conflict in the eastern city of Goma, where M23 forces have consolidated power. The UN says over half a million people have been forced to flee their homes in January alone due to the escalating violence in the eastern DRC. Congo's foreign minister has called for targeted sanctions and an arms embargo against Rwanda over its backing of M23 soldiers and for Rwanda to withdraw its troops from the region. Hundreds of foreign military contractors crossed into Rwanda from Goma today as they surrendered to the UN after M23 fighters consolidated control of the eastern DRC's largest city. UN envoy for the DRC, Vivian van de Perre, addressed the Security Council Tuesday via video link from Goma, wearing a helmet and flak jacket as she pleaded with Rwanda and DRC to work toward a diplomatic solution.
We remind all parties of the obligation to uphold international humanitarian law and stress that attacks on United Nations peacekeepers may constitute war crimes. The degree of suffering that the population in Goma and its environment is enduring is truly unimaginable.
And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Mimi Goodman in New York, joined by Democracy Now! Co-host Juan Gonzalez in Chicago. Hi, Juan.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to all of our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
Will low-income families be able to keep the heat on? Will seniors have access to another meal on wheels? Will Medicaid continue? Will low-income children get breakfasts or lunches at school? Will children be able to go to Head Start? These questions are still on the table, even after a federal judge in Washington, D.C. temporarily halted a radical plan that President Trump announced Tuesday to freeze trillions of dollars in federal grants and loans, even though the money's already been appropriated by Congress. A U.S. district judge said Tuesday she would decide by next week whether to make the injunction permanent. The ruling came after several nonprofits and attorneys general from 22 states filed lawsuits arguing the order would have a devastating impact on hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of recipients who rely on federal grants and loans for their operations. At the White House, Trump's new press secretary, Karoline Leavitt, defended his unprecedented actions.
It means no more funding for illegal DEI programs. It means no more funding for the Green New scam that has cost American taxpayers tens of billions of dollars. It means no more funding for transgenderism and wokeness across our federal bureaucracy and agencies.
As Trump's federal spending freeze briefly took effect Tuesday, Medicaid reimbursement portals went down in all 50 states, cutting off compensation to hospitals and clinics that provide health care to children, low-income families, and people with disabilities. Washington Democratic Senator Patty Murray called Trump's executive order a brazen and illegal move. Maine Independent Senator Angus King said, quote, if this stands, then Congress may as well adjourn. Vermont Independent Senator Bernie Sanders declared of Trump he is not a king. Senate Democratic Leader Chuck Schumer said Trump's actions would likely impact universities, nonprofits, food assistance programs, hospitals, rural health centers, groups that assist disabled veterans, and much more.
This decision is lawless, it's destructive, it's dangerous, it's cruel, it's illegal, and it's unconstitutional. Donald Trump has done a lot of bad things in the last week, but nothing's worse than this.
House Democrats are having an emergency meeting today. Meanwhile, during an interview with Trump's Deputy Chief of Staff for Policy, Stephen Miller, CNN's Jake Tapper asked if the federal funding freeze would impact free school lunches. Miller responded with this point instead.
I want to really drill down on this, Jake, because it's so important. Mm-hmm. There's 2 million employees in the federal government. Overwhelmingly, the career federal service in this country is far left, left wing.
I don't know that to be a fact.
Well, I'll give you a great example. We looked at USAID as an example.
That's
98% of the workforce either donated to Kamala Harris or another left-wing candidate.
That, in fact, is not true. Sam Bagenstos is a law professor at the University of Michigan. He served as general counsel to the Office of Management and Budget under the Biden administration from 2021 to 2022 and as general counsel to the Health and Human Services Department until last December. He joins us now from Ann Arbor, Michigan. Well, why don't you start off, Professor Bagenstos, just responding to what has happened in the last 24 hours?
Well, look, it's just been complete chaos. On Monday night, the Office of Management and Budget issued this memo that purported to freeze a very, very, very broad swath of the federal financial assistance that state governments, private nonprofits, and individuals depend on across America. And you've talked about, you know, some of these programs, low-income heat assistance in the middle of winter, child care development block grants, Head Start, Medicaid, right? And we saw that across the country yesterday, Medicaid portals were shutting down because of this memo. Now, the administration has been backpedaling and trying to set itself up to, you know, to be in a position where they look better about this. So they've said over the last 24 hours, oh, no, we didn't mean this, we didn't mean that. But we still have an incredible amount of uncertainty about whether people can get the benefits that they rely on and whether nonprofits that serve the community are going to be able to actually pay their bills because they're not going to get the money that they've been counting on. And this is money that Congress appropriated. Congress passed a law, the president signed it, and now Donald Trump says, look, I don't necessarily agree with the law, so I don't want to follow it. That is just completely illegal and with really devastating potential consequences for people.
But isn't this also Trump basically trying to test what the courts, the federal courts, will allow him to do as he tries to grab more and more executive power?
Oh, I think absolutely right. I mean, this is an example President Trump, his new nominee for the Office of Management and Budget, Russ Vogt, who is the brains behind this kind of thing, even if he's not in office yet, what they want to do is challenge all of the limitations that have been placed on the president's power since the Nixon administration, since after Watergate. And in particular, they want to challenge the constitutionality of this law, the Impoundment Control Act, which is a law that just sets forth a basic constitutional principle, which is Congress, which represents the people, passes laws that decide how to spend the money. And, you know, if the president disagrees, the president can veto the law. But once a law is enacted, the president has to follow it. President Nixon tried to violate that principle. And so Congress, after Watergate, passed this law to say, no, 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 no. It's the people's house. It is Congress that has the power of the purse. And for years now, Trump and Russ Vogt have been trying to challenge the Impoundment Control Act. They want to get a constitutional challenge to this law into the Supreme Court. They think with a very conservative court that has delivered Donald Trump some signature wins and that likes executive power when Republicans are president, they think they have a good chance of winning. I think they may be a bit overconfident, but, you know, I certainly understand the record that Donald Trump has had and Republican presidents have had with this court.
And could you specify a little bit more what the Impoundment Control Act, what are its provisions? Isn't there like a 45-day period during which Congress can act?
Yeah, I mean, so what the law says, again, is what it's trying to do is just enforce this basic constitutional principle that Congress is the one that decides how to spend our money. When Congress passes a law and the president signs it, a new president doesn't get to come in and say, I disagree with the policy, so I'm not going to follow it. So what the law does is a couple of things. One is it says there are only certain circumstances when a president can delay spending funds. And those circumstances very clearly and intentionally don't include disagreement with the policy reflected in a law passed by Congress, which is exactly what Trump and his OMB were trying to do with this memo. It said, however, if you think, President, that there is some, you know, improper decision made by Congress about how to spend money, we have a process for you, which is write out very clearly what are the specific expenditures that you think are improper, that, you know, shouldn't be followed as a matter of policy. Explain why. Send that to Congress. And you can have 45 days while Congress is considering that. You can have 45 days of pausing the spending. Now, Trump didn't want to do that because that gives too much power to Congress. You know, what he wants to do is unilaterally decide just on his own. I disagree with the law. I don't want to follow it. But the process created in the Impoundment Control Act respects the ability of the president to come in and say, look, I want to make my case that that we should be spending our money differently, but it also ultimately respects the power of Congress elected by people around the country to decide how to spend our money and to pass our laws. And if that law is challenged successfully, then one more of the restraints on executive power that we have tried to build up to challenge this imperial presidency will fall away.
I want to ask you more about Russ Vogt. They've put off the vote, but it looks like he will be approved as head of the OMB. And talk about the Project 2025, his role in that, and this latest article that talks about the metadata in the memo that was released by OMB showing that federal employees were written by people with ties to Project 2025.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is really fascinating because, of course, we heard throughout the campaign, right, the Trump campaign distancing itself from Project 2025. Oh, that wasn't us. That was a bunch of people operating on their own. Well, we know that Russ Vogt, who has been nominated to have a central position in the White House as head of the Office of Management and Budget, was absolutely at the center of drafting and producing Project 2025. We have seen over the past week plus that Trump has been in office for his second term, we have seen one after another of the Project 2025 proposals going into effect in his executive orders and executive actions from his administration. And the metadata point that, that you raise is just fascinating. When you look at the documents that have been produced, the executive orders and other executive statements that are supposedly documents produced by the Trump administration, and you see, you know, you go in and you see who actually wrote them, often it's people on the outside, very prominent conservatives on the outside, who were closely associated with and drafted portions of Project 2025. This is really Project 2025 trying to colonize the federal government, the federal executive branch. It's exactly the thing Trump denied all across the campaign, but it's exactly what's happening.
And what about this offer of the mass resignation of 2 million workers? I mean, it was astounding to hear Miller, now the deputy chief of staff, you know, known for his fierce anti-immigrant stance, when asked about what would happen, it was on this other point of kids not getting food and older people not. He switched gears and said, do you know how many of these workers supported Harris and talked specifically about USAID? Whether what he said was true or not, that they 98% gave money to Harris or other, quote, left-wing candidates. The significance of what this means, urging the workforce to resign?
Yeah, I mean, look, in our government, to make it work, we rely on a professional career civil service. You know, that was a decision that we as a democracy made over 100 years ago to reform what was really a very corrupt system that was not governing effectively. And ever since the late 19th century, you know, there we can have criticisms about various aspects of civil service rules, but we have defended a career nonpartisan expert civil service that has been necessary to carry out the tasks of governance in an increasingly complex society. I have been both a career government official and a political appointee in two different administrations. And I can tell you the career civil servants, I don't know how they vote. You know, some of them vote Democrat, some of them vote Republican, some of them don't vote at all. But what they do is they provide real expertise in how to actually do the people's business. And you have seen over and over again the Trump administration, both the first time and now, trying to hollow out and really scare away the people who've worked incredibly hard, you know, to deliver health care to folks, to make sure that people have child care, to make sure that people get housing opportunities. You know, these are people who are working really hard for ordinary folks in America, and they really shouldn't be treated this way. And I have to say, you know, the way that supposed buyout offer was drafted and sent around, I mean, it really, it's very sloppy. I don't think there was legal authority for it. I mean, there's certainly very substantial questions about that. And I think any government employee would be very, very, very much well advised to look really carefully at what they're agreeing to before they agree to something like that.
Sam Bagenstos, you are law professor at University of Michigan. Before that, you served as general counsel to the Office of Management and Budget, and then general counsel to Health and Human Services. Do you want to share a final comment on the new person nominated to be head of that, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., before we play what his cousin has to say?
Look, I just think it's really dangerous to put someone like Robert F. Kennedy Jr. in charge of our health department. He has been an anti-vaxxer. He denies that, but, you know, there's a very clear record that he has stirred up fear and opposition to vaccination on the basis of falsehoods. And, you know, this is incredibly harmful to the public health. Look, you know, there are things that he talks about that I think a lot of us would agree with, you know, about trying to improve our food system, about aiming at prevention rather than treatment. You know, I think all that's great, but none of that outweighs the degree of disinformation and fear that he has cast out into the world that has really harmed the public health.
Sam Bagenstos, I want to thank you for being with us, law professor at the University of Michigan. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org.